From the KTLO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Crumry. Thank you for tuning in. Bartlett Regional Hospital is taking over ownership of an independently owned pediatric clinic in downtown Juneau. Glacier Pediatrics has been offering pediatric care in Juneau for more than two decades. But hospital administration says discussions with the practice about its struggles to operate independently have been ongoing for over the past month and a half. The clinic sees children from birth through age 19. Earlier this week, the city-owned hospital's board of directors voted unanimously to purchase the assets of the practice and bring the clinic under Bartlett's umbrella of care. Under the plan approved by the board, the clinic will remain at the same location, and its current employees will continue to oversee medical services. Clinic employees will become hospital employees, and the clinic will be renamed Bartlett Glacier Pediatrics. Juneau has continued to see multiple private medical practices consolidate with larger entities, namely the Alaska Native-run Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium. In the past 2 years, SEARCH has acquired multiple clinics throughout the region. This spring, Bartlett similarly took over family practice physicians in the Mendenhall Valley. The transition for Glacier Pediatrics is estimated to be complete by the start of next year. On Tuesday, the board approved $200,000 to purchase the assets. The purchase comes as Bartlett's finances appear more secure following a difficult year. In 2024, the hospital faced a multi-million dollar deficit that threatened it with bankruptcy. Its board controversially chose to reduce staffing and shut down multiple programs to keep that from happening. A proposition on Juneau's local ballot this year asks voters whether to lower the cap on the local property tax rate, also known as the mill rate. Advocates say the proposition will help make Juneau more affordable. But who actually benefits and who loses if it passes? KTLO's Clarice Larson finds out.
Proposition 1 seeks to cap the rate the city uses to determine how much residents pay in property taxes each year. Assemblymember Christine Wall explains it like this.
Everyone who owns property in Juneau, every year they pay property tax to the city based on the value of their property. This would be capping the rate at which the assembly can charge them for that.
The proposed cap is only slightly lower than what property owners are already paying. But the rate has been higher before, and the assembly wants the flexibility to charge more in the future. But an advocacy group called the Affordable Juneau Coalition says the city needs to focus its spending on things it needs to fund, not what it wants to fund. Angela Rodell is the treasurer of the group.
I think it's really imperative that the city show its residents that they care about affordability and want to really focus on the things that make this community very livable.
So what would the change actually mean for your wallet? Well, the city estimates that owners with property valued at $500,000 or less would save about $80 per year in property taxes if the proposition passes. That's assuming the home value stays the same. Now, let's compare that to the top commercial property owner in the city, the Hecla Greens Creek Mine. It owns property valued at just under $285 million by the 2024 assessment. With the proposed cap, it would save just over $45,000, assuming the value stays the same. According to census data, more than a third of Juneau households are renters, and renters might not see any benefit from a cap. Landlords have no legal obligation to pass any savings from the change onto their tenants. So the winner in this scenario is those who own a lot of property in town. The city is the loser. That's because the assembly would have less money to fund city services. Here's Wall again.
That's kind of the question that's being asked this year is, do you think we should be focusing on making this a community that has services for our lowest income people? Or do you think that we should cut taxes for the wealthiest in the community to make things more affordable?
The change would result in a $1 million loss in revenue to the city year over year. The rate cap wouldn't be immediately devastating to the city's roughly $140 million in annual discretionary revenue. But less revenue equals less money to pay for services. Wall says the assembly may need to make cuts to the budget if the proposition passes. For each dollar the city collects in property taxes, a bit more than 50 cents goes towards education, and a little under 40 cents goes towards city services.
But when I think long term, it's maybe less about the money and more about the city's ability to respond to changing environments.
Now, it's unclear what services the assembly might choose to cut. It would make those decisions after the election. Rodell says she thinks the city can handle the change. And in doing so, she says it will prove to constituents that it, too, can tighten its belt.
We know that the city can deliver a lot of services for nine mills. And what we're asking the city to do is to continue to be really thoughtful about how and where and when they collect tax and spend that tax.
If approved by voters, the rate cap would be applied next city budget season. Election day is Tuesday, October 7th. In Juneau, I'm Clarice Larson.
And the state of Alaska imagines a future when the already growing shellfish farming industry takes off. Researchers studied an oyster farm in Juneau to understand the environmental conditions there and what it might say about the challenges and opportunities for growing shellfish in Alaska. KTOO's Alex Solomon has more.
Maida Mezdeg owns Salty Lady Seafood Company, the only Pacific oyster farm in Juneau. In Bridget Cove, she grows thousands of oysters arranged in rows of floating mesh bags. Some years, naturally occurring toxic algal blooms have shut down her farm for weeks at a time. That motivated her to ask researchers, can she predict when it will happen?
It's such a mystery.
On Mondays, Mezdeg samples her oysters for algae called Alexandrium catenella and sends them to the state lab in Anchorage. The algae produce a neurotoxin that builds up in shellfish when they eat it. Just 1 milligram can kill a person. Testing is federally regulated. If the test comes back clean, she harvests. But if the oysters test positive for the toxin above the FDA limit, the farm shuts down.
And when you're not making any money, but you're spending money on labor, that can be really expensive and hard.
In 2023, Mezdeg says that caused her to shut down for half of her 20-week harvest season. Since the farm couldn't sell oysters, she says she lost clients and had to lay people off. To reopen, the farm has to pass a series of tests.
We just have to wait. And we don't know how long it takes.
That loss of sales isn't great for business. The federal government is invested in boosting mariculture in Alaska's waters, and there are still questions about how the environment here affects the health and quality of oysters. The state is invested in those questions, too. About a decade ago, it set a goal to grow Alaska's mariculture into a $100 million industry by 2040. The study had a humble start. Mezdeg's question landed on Courtney Hart's desk when she was studying paralytic shellfish poisoning as a graduate student at the University of Alaska Southeast. Now she's a crustacean shellfish program manager with the Port Gamble Sklallam Tribe in Washington.
The first year, I was just trying to figure out if there was an easy way to monitor for Alexandrium or harmful algal blooms on her farm so I could help, like, warn her essentially when a bloom was coming.
But Hart says she hit a dead end.
We didn't really solve that problem.
Sometimes the researchers would detect the toxic algae in the water and not see it in the oysters. Other times they'd see it in the oysters, but not the water. And she says the problem is not unique to Alaska. Harmful algal blooms are notoriously unpredictable.
Whether that bloom becomes toxic for shellfish really depends on so many factors that scientists have been studying for a long time and haven't quite pinned down.
But she says the study morphed when NOAA researchers joined. They wanted to answer a bigger question. What environmental conditions impact the health and quality of oysters in Southeast Alaska? Besides toxic algae, other environmental factors pose challenges to the growing industry. Hart says the spring phytoplankton bloom provides oysters a feast for only a short period, and they practically starve over the winter.
And often it may mean that it takes 3 years for your oysters to reach the right size versus just 2 years, which is more typical down here in Washington.
But there are benefits, too. Hart says the consistently cold water prevents the oysters from spawning, so they retain high levels of lipids, healthy fats that make for a high-quality oyster.
Like, as far as health of an oyster, for humans, it's good.
While environmental conditions play an important role in how the industry develops, Bobby Hudson says reaching the market is key. She's the executive director of the Pacific Shellfish Institute. She splits her time between Washington State and Gustavus and is working with Southeast Conference on an upcoming report about investments in the mariculture industry.
Alaska can have tremendous goals, but at the end of the day, if there's not a market for those products or a really strong market for those products, they're not going to be able to reach those goals.
She says things like scaling up production, setting up cold distribution networks, and making toxin testing more efficient could help Alaska's shellfish farms grow. In Juneau, I'm Alex Solomon.
And for years, a national database that tracks maps and landslides has had a major hole, Alaska. But that's about to change. As Avery Elfelt reports for the Alaska Desk, the state released an inventory earlier this month that pinpoints where thousands of slides have happened in the past.
Jillian Nicolazzo has spent the last several years poring over more than 1,000 geologic reports that date back to the 1950s, or even earlier.
First step was to go through basically any published report that looked like it might have a landslide.
Her goal, to create Alaska's first statewide map of where landslides have occurred in the past for the State Department of Natural Resources. Now, that final product is available to the public. Nicolazzo says it's a crucial tool that will help communities, researchers, and government agencies examine previous landslides and
extrapolating if there are certain slope angles with certain soil types or rock types that are more susceptible than others.
The information comes from already published reports that were unrelated to landslides by the state agency and the U.S. Geological Survey. They were largely created using aerial imagery. Nicolazzo helped identify landslides in each report, categorize every slide, and compile the information in one spot.
It's a good step one, I think. Gets it all in one place where it's easy to find, and then people can start getting creative.
The new online map makes clear that Alaska is highly susceptible to landslides. It also highlights that certain types of landslides are more common in particular areas than in others. If you zoom in on Southeast Alaska, for instance, hundreds of blue dots appear throughout the region. Those blue dots signify places where so-called debris flows have taken place.
That sort of fits with what we know because they have steep terrain and a lot of water running through, so it makes sense that they would have a lot of flow related to water.
Several years ago, the USGS compiled its own national landslide inventory using data from states. But until now, Alaska didn't have much to contribute. The new database will feed into the nationwide version and start to fill in the Alaska-sized gap. Reporting in Haines, I'm Avery Elfelt.
And as for the weather here in Juneau, it's currently 47 degrees and raining. Tonight, we're expecting more heavy rain, and we could get some wind gusts as high as 45 miles an hour. The rain is set to continue on Saturday, but Sunday it might dry out a little bit, and Monday may end up being sunny after all. This has been a news update from KTOO.